Welcome to the Ministry Collaborative Podcast,
a series of honest conversations about opportunities,
challenges,
and joy in ministry today.
These episodes are inspired by interactions with ministry leaders from across the country
as they explore possibilities,
learn from broad perspectives,
take risks,
and cultivate candid discussions
that generate disruptive creativity.
This is Mark Ramsey. It's always a good day when I can sit down with my colleagues, Jennifer Maxell, Adam Mixon, Adam Bornham, and Ryan Bonfilio, and have a conversation about what's important in ministry. We want to take up today kind of the topic of strategic planning versus strategic thinking, technical versus adaptive leadership, and that whole thing, but particularly as it's coming home to roost right now. I think one of the questions we're getting more than any other is, please help me plan for the next 3 months, 6 months, a year in my faith community. How do I do that? And I can hear, particularly if it's a pastor saying that to us, I can hear right behind that the fairly anxious breathing of congregation members who in very well-meaning ways are scared there's not a plan. And there's always got to be a plan. I wrote an article about this a few weeks ago where I said in every pastor's office I moved into as the newly called pastor to that congregation, on the highest shelf near the window, gathering dust, were the last five or six strategic plans. And I guarantee you, from the extra inches of dust on each one of them, they hadn't been opened since the day after they were adopted by somebody. I think planning is good, but I think we're off some when we think that a good strategic plan guarantees us a certain future. And I'm not sure God has any investment in either a strategic plan or certainly a certain future that is done apart from God.
Wow.
Yeah, you know, when we had a workshop last weekend with a congregation in upstate New York, wonderful group of folks, and this was a lot of our conversation. And, you know, I harped a little bit on the line from Steve Blank that there are no answers in the building. So one of the traps we fall into when we fall into planning versus thinking is that we continue to look down and in for all of the answers, that we think all of the answers lie within our institutional makeup, our institutional assumptions, our institutional background. Sometimes those things can be pulled on and used in really imaginative ways, but it is incredibly important to look much more broadly at what God is doing in the world and to take cues from that and to be willing to attend to things that we had not anticipated. It's very hard to do that if we have doubled down on a particular plan or strategy or vision or mission that we're not willing to veer from. So to me, I hold that close to me in those conversations, that there are no answers in the building. We have to look much further out, much more broadly, to see what God is doing.
I hear what you're saying about not having the answers in the building, Adam, but I'm not sure that I will go all the way that way. I think there are some answers, and I think that they're likely showing up in ways that we did not anticipate. As a pastor, I think that giving special attention to the things that have surprised me over the last year, tuning into an unexpected blessing or an unexpected response or an unexpected traction in something, again, that I did not plan for. It was spontaneous, but it was also generative. Paying attention to those things is important. Now, I'm not anti-intellectual, but I wonder if in all of our thinking and planning, are we also cultivating discernment and a deep type of sensitivity? Again, those surprising moments, those astounding moments, those burning bush moments, are we paying attention to that stuff? Because I think that's where life is. There's a direction there that we're overlooking because we're too wed to our plan and program. And what could be deeply meaningful and deeply spiritual is often written off as being extraneous.
I think one of the things that both of you are naming is almost like a directional shift. So when we do these big strategic plans, we look far out and determine where we're going to end up in this vast, wide ocean. And then we track how we're going to get there backwards, because we go from this big vision we have and track backwards to where we are. And I think that maybe what we need to do is start shifting that focus to looking at where we are now and then try to track just a little bit further. Let's track the next step. That this idea that we can be in this moment and figure out what the next 3 to 5 years looks like, or what the next 2 to 3 years, or even what the next year looks like. And I think that really by paying close, faithful attention to what is already brewing where we are, that there are some sprigs that are growing up beneath the soil in our context, that there is already energy burgeoning up within our congregations, and to figure out where that is and make sure that we nurture that. That it's not about simply casting vision for the sake of vision, and it's not about growth for the sake of growth, but it is a more nurturing type of growth that seeks to really edify the people that we have been charged to shepherd in this season.
It makes me think, Jennifer, that so many strategic plans are really about institutional maintenance and management. It's to assure that in the future, the institution that we serve and love looks pretty much like the institution we serve looks now. What strategic thinking does, as opposed to strategic planning, is that it creates this imaginative space to allow God to come in and do something really different, to do something much more daring and much more disruptive, something that's much more local and contextual, and that's attuned to the voices of the people we serve in our communities and our churches. It allows for surprise and risk in ways that I think strategic plans, at their worst, try to eliminate from the equation. There's no risk or surprise oftentimes in a strategic plan.
Exactly. And God is often the absent character in strategic plans. Back to what Jennifer, what you were saying is, let's figure out where we want to be and then let's retrofit it. Most strategic plans have lots of words like strengthen, continue, improve. Rarely is there a surprise. God's activity is everything for the individual Christian. God's activity is the whole ball game for congregations and faith communities. Where is God active now? And how do we run as fast as we can to get there? And I got to tell you, in my experience personally and leading congregations, the whole path to where God's activity is rarely certain when we set out. It feels very much to me like the women going to the tomb on Easter morning. It was dark. They couldn't see much. They mistook who was there as a gardener or something else. Exactly. Now is the time, as if any other time wasn't, but particularly where we are now. Now is the time for congregations to feel free not to mimic business strategic plans or mimic what people do in their own vocations, and instead throw themselves into this wonderful, mysterious activity God is doing. What I love about Scripture is when one is called, or when a congregation is called, there is not understanding first. The Enlightenment told us understand and then do. The Bible is exactly opposite. Go do this thing. Go follow this person. And along the way, I'll give you some strategic planning advice or something.
You know, in the book of Acts, and it was first really pointed out to me in Willie Jennings' commentary on Acts, the story of Acts is the story of people being called to places and to other people that not only were they not paying attention to, but these were places and people to whom they do not want to go. This is why a strategic plan would not have worked in Acts. I don't think Peter's plan would have been to have this bizarre vision telling him to rise, kill, and eat, and then to go to the Gentiles. I don't think that would have been part of the strategic plan. But the other part of this, and Mark alluded to this in a couple of ways, that this is actually the most exciting and joyful way to do things. This is not in spite of how fun it will be. This is the most exciting way to do it. And I do think that there are some initial hurdles in the way that we want to approach this in terms of our thinking and our psychology and emotionally. But once we can get through those hurdles, we begin to encounter the joy of living into this uncharted imaginative territory. And I think that is the story of the gospel, and especially as we talk about it this morning, the narrative of Acts.
I do think that some of this speaks to not just our strategic planning or whatever, but how we're formed spiritually. I think most of us learn very early on to pray, give us this day our daily bread, and then we jettisoned it. We threw it out. That wasn't a prayer that applied to anything for real, which to me makes me want to ask a question as church leaders, church boards, just people leading families, when we start thinking about our plans, and I like to use the word vision instead of plan, is our vision broad enough that God can actually inhabit it? Or are we assuming that God must operate in these ways in order to bring my plans to pass? It's disorienting to surrender that, but it really does lead to a different way of being. The church I serve has never had an endowment. We've never had the space to plan 5 years down the road. But at the same time, after 96 years of history, we've been able to survive and thrive and move forward in ways that are nimble and in some ways different than what we imagined, but somehow better than what we could have planned for. Do we really believe that God's plans are better than ours?
And I think the part of that is, do we build agility and flexibility and adaptability into our plans? I know in emergent strategy, one of the key principles is there's always time to do the right work. And when we look at Jesus's ministry, Jesus is always on the way someplace and always gets sidetracked by someone or something that is not part of where he's going. And he stops and he talks to people and he heals people and he teaches and he does all kinds of stuff that's not in the plan, that's not on the path, that is not part of where he was trying to go. And so I think part of it for us is to learn how to build that adaptability into our ideas of what it is we feel we're supposed to be doing. There's a certain tone deafness when we lean so heavily on the plan that when the people that we are called to bless, the people that we are called to minister to show up on our doorstep and we tell them they have to come back at 10 o'clock because that's when the church opens, that we have lost the ability to be agile and we have lost the ability to be nimble and flexible. And I think that that's really part of what we are wrestling with when you ask this question of what we believe. It's not just a physical inflexibility. It is also a faith inflexibility. It's a spiritual inflexibility that anchors so heavily on what we already know, and not what there is for us to know about what God is doing and where God is taking us in this moment.
You know, Jen, on that point, I think we might say about Jesus that he didn't have a strategic plan, but he had a really clear sense about his guiding purpose. And a plan and a purpose are really different things. Plans keep us on track. Plans give us turn-by-turn directions from how to get from A to B. But a purpose tells us where we're headed. It doesn't give us the step-by-step directions. It leaves space for wisdom and the Spirit's guidance. It leaves space for those diversions off the track, because for Jesus, those weren't diversions from the plan. That was the purpose. The purpose was to go to the margins and to be distracted and to be with people that the leaders didn't think he should be with and be talking to. That was the purpose. They weren't divergences from a plan, because the plan didn't govern Jesus's movements. His purpose did.
And to Jennifer and to Ryan, to both of your comments, through about five congregations, leading five congregations, I think probably one of the truest words I ever spoke to them, but also one of the most disruptive, almost incendiary words I said to them was that the most difficult and challenging thing to do in church life is to plan for, pray for, give resources to, and focus to a constituency that is not yet present. One of the problems with strategic plans, that's never a category. It's always, we know who we have. We even know our neighborhood. We never dream about who's not here, who's been left out, who needs to be reached, even if it stretches our current idea of who we are way out of any semblance of order. But to plan for and give resources and attention to a constituency not yet present is so consistent with the life and spirit of the Gospels and so absent in most of our faith communities.
I think that's right on. And the word that you use that I love is dream. And how we so infrequently dream. When it comes to the places that we are called to lead, it's almost as if the responsibility to make sure that, you know, we use the money wisely, that the space is cared for, that all those concrete functions robs us of our ability to dream. And yet dreaming is an essential task of being able to envision anything. And I think that part of what we are being called to is to dream again, to dream afresh, to dream anew, and to be okay with the fact that the dream is not concrete, that this is something that is scary, that is not controllable, that is out of our wheelhouse, but to also realize that there is energy and vitality and vibrance in those places. I think part of what has robbed some of our churches of its vibrance is the predictability of it all, is the fact that everything is planned and there is a way and there is a tradition and there is a set expectation for everything that we do. And so if you're not the personality type that is moved by knowing what is coming, there's not a whole lot for you there.
It's interesting, Jennifer, that you say that, because I was thinking about the effects of poverty on people and how it inhibits the ability to imagine alternatives. And I think in a real way, there's something depressed about how the church has maintained herself, something impoverished. Instead of realizing that we have access to the wealth of heaven, God's best for our worst, we function as if what he has given us is going to run out. So instead of, again, looking forward, dreaming, we pinch pennies, we count paper clips, we measure our steps as to ensure some type of future. But that future, whatever it is, can't be compared to what God has imagined for us. And we won't know until we surrender our plans.
Isn't that one of the tasks of preaching, though? To point to another reality.
Mm-hmm.
That part of what we do when we stand in that pulpit is not to continue to give utterance and credence to where people are right now, where our communities are right now, but is to speak of another future and to envision another reality that is not yet in existence. And I think sometimes we become so embedded with where we are and comforting people where we are and speaking to the needs that are right now, that we don't help people to rise above all of that and to be able to see that God really has something different for you. God has something better for you, that there is something else out there beyond this point that our faith is pushing us towards.
Another piece of this that I think is worth naming is when we dig into any sort of planning, visioning, mission statement work, I know the congregations do this work all the time, and I do think that there's aspects of it that are very valuable. But I do think in the midst of that, we need to ask, what is our motivation for this? Why are we doing this? Because I think in some of those cases, not all of them, but in some of them, the answer might be because this makes things feel safe. We feel like we can count on something if we do this. What's so interesting about that is that we know that that's not rational. We know that the world moves too quickly, and we know that there are things that we have to attend to that we didn't expect. So underlying the difference between strategic planning and strategic thinking has to be the question of our hearts and where they are.
Well, we haven't spent a lot of time talking about what strategic thinking is and how we nurture it. And that is equally important. One congregation I served, we had two major initiatives. One was a community garden that just spread all over our front yard. The other was a storytelling event modeled off The Moth that we did at a bar across the street. Both helped us gain visibility in the community and gather constituencies not yet present, at least for events. But the thing is, neither of those were on anybody's radar screen 6 weeks before we started them. They both plopped into our lap. And we started doing them, and we discovered, oh, wow, the Spirit's wind is at our back. If we'd relied on our strategic plan, we never would have done it. But because the boards, particularly I was working with at that time and the staff, were nimble and were eager to see opportunities, they jumped at it, even as some people were going, well, let's try it, but you know, we're going to have to keep an eye on it. Exactly. But we went toward it. We never would have done that if we hadn't nurtured a finely honed sense of the possible, the dream, and the thinking.
Thank you for listening to the Ministry Collaborative Podcast,
a project of the Macedonian Ministry Foundation.
The Ministry Collaborative nurtures a national network of pastors and congregations committed to faithful,
creative,
and courageous engagement in their communities.
Our producer is Marthane Sanders.
To find out more about our work of cultivating leadership that makes a difference in congregations and communities,
visit our website
at www.ministrycollaborative.org.